All right, we are live with the first ever Bloody Elbow MMA Ask Me Anything or Q&A, whatever. I like MMA Ask Me Anything or Mixed Martial Ask Me Anything. I think that's cute, but I don't know how much value there is in being cute. I'm joined with my good friend and longtime conversation partner, Brent Brookhouse. Brent, this is just one of the many conversations we've had together face to face, right?
Yeah, we're extremely close, and at no point have we had a confusing relationship via anything like that.
Wow, see, now a sense of confusion has already been added. But anyway, this is, for those of us who couldn't, or for those of you who couldn't guess by our amazing magnetic ability to just bounce ideas off each other. This is the first time I have ever spoken to Brent in person, so we are flying by the seat of our pants if either of us are wearing pants at this point.
I'm gonna leave that a mystery, so.
All right, that's a good mystery to have. I mean, I think that mystery is one of the keys to doing this show well. We're all about the unexpected, which is, of course, why we put out an announcement last week that we were looking for questions, because, the value's really, not, well, okay, never mind. The value is knowing. We know what we're going to talk about, and I didn't know where I was going with that, so I had to cut it short.
Well, the important thing is we put out an announcement last week, and we're getting people today that want to know where the announcement was, so very effective.
Yeah, it was a very effective announcement. We put it out as a fan post. I think next time I might put one out on Facebook, on the Bloody Elbow Facebook page, to appeal to a new and potentially less literate level of readership to see what kind of questions we get there. But we got a whole shitload of questions to get to in response to this. I mean, way, way more than we could answer in one show.
Yeah, there's a good list. There were a lot of questions that we aren't even going to be able to touch that we're kind of saving for down the road, so.
Yeah, hopefully if this works, I think we'll do one of these maybe once a month, I think is what we'd like to do, is a monthly show, do a Q&A just for the fun of it, just to see what, especially if I think the important thing to me would be to see what we're kind of missing or what people aren't getting to know from the month-to-month stories. Like, what's the news out there that people are still ending up with questions about that they don't feel like they've quite got the handle on that they want to have. And obviously right now, there's a couple of big stories out there with the new uniform deal, especially in Tough 20, that are, and Tough being the ongoing saga it is, those are sort of like the big things that people are still constantly finding themselves unsure of.
Right, except for me, who has barely watched Tough this year, so.
Yeah, I don't, I will say this, that I mean, I knew who everyone was and had watched them going into Tough, but at that point afterward, it was just like, I don't really want to watch the show. I mean, and as much as I enjoy watching women's MMA and watching a lot of these women compete, there's very little value in sitting down and, I mean, and it sounds to me like sitting down and spending 3 months getting to deeply, deeply hate all the women that are on that show.
Right, and I mean, as much as it seems like every season, the first episode or two, everybody goes, "Oh, it's totally different. They changed the production," and then, within a couple episodes, somebody does a prank, and then there's, "Oh, we got to get them," and then it just becomes the same exact thing that it always is. So
Yeah.
basically, I wait for friends to tell me, "Hey, the fight's about to start," and then I'll turn it on at that point, or I'll DVR it and fast forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things where even the best, like, there are reality shows that I've loved in the past. I used to watch Hell's Kitchen or Pickers. For God knows what reason I got into that. But, like, nothing really stays good after, like, 3 seasons. Like, it'd be even the most nuanced, interesting reality show, after a while, you're still like, yeah, they've got this dramatic situation that they're going to solve by the end of it. And I mean, like, there's no, eventually there's no drama. Like, no matter how, I don't know, the range of human personalities and experience is unfortunately not nearly as broad as we'd like it to be.
Right. And then when you cut them all off from all, basically all stimulus other than each other, then it's just even worse. So.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's not even a question that we got. Well, maybe it is, but that's all beside the point. We're here to answer questions. And the first question that we're going to lead off with, and this is a little unfair because it's not from a reader, but from one of our own staff, from Mookie, who's just a font of questions and inquiry. And he asked, what declining UFC fighter would you prefer to stop fighting right now?
I don't even have anybody that really jumps out to me at this point. You know, it seems like I should be desperate for Andrei Arlovsky to retire since, you know, it was like 4 years ago that I was basically begging him to hang up the gloves because he was a guy that I like as a person. I've met him a couple times, really nice guy, and I liked watching him fight, and then he was just, his switch was getting flipped over and over, and, you know, now he's a top 10 heavyweight in the UFC, and he's main eventing cards, and he's super relevant, you know, probably more relevant than he's ever been in his career, so, you know, I feel like there's a lot of times where even you get to that point, and unless it's like a Jens Pulver where it's you don't really know what can happen or what changes that somebody can make or anything. So, you know, there is not anybody that jumps out to me. There's guys that I worry about down the road, but, you know, pretty much any fighter in boxing or MMA, you have to worry a little bit about what comes down the road, but they have to make their money now doing what they want to do. So.
Yeah, I mean, part of me always just says, like, if any fighter wants to walk away at any time, they should. Like, that's always the right time, is the moment that you're like, I think I'm going to hang him up. Like, great, adios, you know? When you get, like, who was that guy who had, like, a PhD, I want to say, and it's Canadian featherweight or bantamweight?
Yeah.
God, forgetting his name now. He had that awesome elbow knockout where he's hitting the guy in the head over and over again with the elbows as he's rushing in. And I'm totally forgetting his name, but he retired like really early in his career. You know, it was just like 5 or 6 years in, maybe even not that. And it's just like, shit, that's the right time. I mean, you're like, I don't want to do it anymore. Great. This is not an easy way or a fun way to make a living. Like, you know, I mean, one of the mantras, one of the few things that I consistently like Nick Diaz saying is basically like, this is not a great way to make a living, and I'm like, I wouldn't do it if I didn't think I had to, basically.
Right.
But beyond that, I and this is a slight diatribe for me, is I really don't like hearing fans and media tell fighters to retire because, personally, as much as I might think a fighter should retire, you know, like, to me, I think Shogun or Big Nog should both be looking at hanging up their gloves, and that would be, you know, I don't really want to watch them anymore. They're both at the point where they're just getting hurt a lot, but I don't know what's going on in their lives. I don't know what, you know, how well Nogueira could just stop fighting and what that would mean for him financially, what that would mean for his personal life, for his career, like how that would affect him. I don't know him. And if you don't know somebody in that way, it's really hard to tell them like, oh, you need to quit your job now, because that's, to me, from the outside, I can see that's making your life worse.
Right. And I mean, it happens in boxing, you know, when Cotto and Margarito fought the second time, Margarito's blind in one eye, and basically they backdoored it through the commission to get him licensed, and people were like, oh, he shouldn't take this fight, this is dangerous, he could go blind, and it's like, he basically is blind in the one eye already. He has a couple fights left to make what money he can for his family. I don't think there's, you know, some great thing waiting for him after he retires. I don't think he's gonna, you know, nobody makes that much money training or whatever. So, you know, he was gonna make his money, take the risk, and, you know, hopefully that $1 million or whatever provides for his family. It's a little different when it's, you know, millions of dollars versus, you know, 8-8 for a UFC undercard fight or something. But we don't usually worry about, like, that's the other thing, is people worry about the fighters that they like or that they just don't want to see anymore. But nobody worries about the guy that's, like, 0-3 on a UFC undercard. They're never like, oh, I hope he hangs him up. Like, no, they just want him to bounce and go, you know, wherever he ends up.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, eventually it's just like, well, you know, the argument often to me seems to come down to, well, either you don't think anyone should be fighting at all if you're worried about them suffering severe brain trauma. Like, if that's just the worry out there, you know, flat out is like, oh, they're going to, you know, suffer a really bad, well, it's like, okay, yeah, anybody at any time in this sport could do it. Or it's otherwise, it's just like this really kind of paternalistic idea of like, you know, I don't like the idea of going and telling somebody that they shouldn't do something that they're legally allowed to do because I think that's a bad life choice. Like, if I'm your family or your friend and I'm like, whoa, you're getting hammered every night and that's got a really bad effect on your family and your kids, then, that's one thing to tell somebody to stop. But if I'm like, I think you drink too much, guy from Jersey Shore, like, what, you know, how the fuck do I know?
Right. And then there's also the thing where we, like, I brought up Arlovsky earlier, and it's like, you know, honestly, when he was getting knocked out all those times, probably the safest way to lose a fight, you know, it, as opposed to, like, a prolonged beating, he was just getting caught, going out. It's not good for your brain, but, you know, we were talking about it on Twitter earlier, Mark Hunt has taken, like, huge amounts of damage over his career. Like, if there's somebody that I worry about in, like, 10, 20 years, Mark Hunt, I don't imagine, is going to be in great shape compared to a lot of guys that, you know, you see get knocked out spectacularly a few times. And
no, and I mean, I love Hunt, too, and I think he's a great, smart fighter, but can you imagine him training somebody? He would basically just, like, beat your ass for the fun of it, and that would be how he trained. Like, I mean, he fights with a sadism that I can't imagine would make him a great trainer at all, you know?
Right. And there's the uniquely skilled, like, guys that are so different from everybody else. Like, you know, like, Michael Jordan was never going to be a good coach because he doesn't understand why people can't just go be Michael Jordan.
Yeah, it's just like, well, what, you can't float through the air from the free throw line and dunk the ball? I mean, right. What do I have to teach you?
It's going to have the same thing where it's like, oh, you get hit a couple times, you know, no big deal, because, you know, you've got this incredibly hard head. You know, don't worry about that. Like, you know, I don't imagine that he's somebody that's going to be able to put together nuanced game plans that that are going to be easy for people at various skills to follow. So, you know, he's making his money now, probably, and then, you know, maybe he'll get a nice job being an ambassador for the sport in some capacity, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope that there's something waiting for him, especially just because he is, like, one of the few great MMA fighters from Australia, New Zealand. He's, you know, in combat, just, like, he's the only K-1 Grand Prix winner that's not from Europe, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the UFC sets up little mini, mini ambassadorships for, like, you know, he can not run things, but, you know, just do media stuff in Australia and New Zealand or something, and, you know, maybe there's something for him there. But beyond that, you know, even that's just kind of the thing where the UFC just gives guys roles to give them a little money after they retire. So really, he's making what money he can now, so it's hard to just be like, oh, no, you need to retire, you've taken a lot of punishment. Like, if he can make an extra $500,000 before he retires, then, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know the cost-benefit analysis that is actually important to that person at that time. I think it's really hard to know what that is.
Yeah, you see guys like boxers who are retired who they're either broke or they're in bad health or they're broke and in bad health. You know, like, I guess the hope you have is that their health holds up, and if not, that they have enough money where they can afford the care they need. So.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, aging sucks. Right. And, you know, like, and hard physical labor ages you. And, you know, it, to me, it's also just like, you know, I think about people doing, like, you know, factory work or that kind of, like, really backbreaking manual labor, too. And it's just like, well, they end up in the same position, but they never even got the chance to make money or get the glory and fame that could come out of it. At that point, like, there are a lot worse ways to pay that price, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my back shot from poor posture from writing, so, you know.
Exactly. There are many worse ways to pay the price. All right, so let's go to another just kind of general business question. What is your feeling on fighters who don't call out opponents? This is from Fedorable, a reader. And whether, you know, that feeling of like, oh, what I accomplish says what I, you know, tells everybody what they need to know, and I'll take whatever the UFC gives me, and I don't want to talk shit and all that. As a fan and as a media, you know, what's your take on that? Can you remember?
There's the part of me that just says, like, some guys are who they are, and let them be that. You know, it's not comfortable for everybody to try and, like, steal the wrestling phrase, to cut a promo after they just went through 15 minutes, you know, fighting and expending ridiculous amounts of energy. But, you know, there is a marketing element to the sport where, you know, if there's a clip that's being replayed of you calling out a notable fighter, or even just from, like, our standpoint, if somebody makes a good call-out or an interesting call-out, then that probably makes its way into some stories that probably gets referenced down the road. You know, it establishes kind of a narrative for your where you're at in your career at that moment, or, you know, where what your next step might be. So from that aspect, like, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense for you to kind of set up what fans are going to think of when they think of you, as opposed to, you know, you're one of 12 winners, 12, 14 winners on a card. Hopefully you didn't get lost in the shuffle. Hopefully your fight was impressive enough that you're remembered. Hopefully your ranking establishes that you have to get a good fight. You know, I think it's just kind of risky to just say, oh, no, I'm, you know, whatever happens. You just give up a little bit of, you know, what little bit of control you have over your career, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to me, what I find strange, I think, for me personally, is, like, I already know that basically almost no fighters have a plan for if they lose. Like, I've talked to enough of them that if you ever ask them, like, what's going to happen if you lose this fight, that you're coming into, like, I don't know. I don't have a plan to lose. You know? Like, that's just not there. And, you know, not even in, like, a PR kind of way, but it's just sort of like a mental in my camp kind of thing. I can't think about losing. But it seems like if you're not going to have a plan to lose, at the very least you have to have a plan of what if I win? Like, what if I win? What do I want? And, you know, it shouldn't just be, oh, I want another fight. It should just have a name. Like, have your coaches give you a name, you know, just say, like, we're going to call out this guy. He makes sense. Call him out. You know, even Phil Davis had the worst call out of all time, calling out Anderson Silva. But shit, if we didn't write about it, and if it's not something I still remember, I can remember Phil Davis calling out Anderson Silva from, like, a month ago, you know?
Right, and I mean, there's crazy stuff, like, Maldonado gets called out now in 2014, like, that's the craziest thing to me, that people are calling out Maldonado, but it's a fight that makes sense, and then you start going, okay, well, we can talk about that, and then, you know, we're in our email for Bloody Elbow, and we're, okay, somebody needs to write that up. Oh, don't forget that call-out happened. That should go in a story. And, you know, there is, like, people act like it's this horrible thing, but we have schedules we have to meet, we have content we have to put up, so sometimes, like, the weirdest call-out can just become a story that gets, you know, read 6,000 times in 4 hours, and, you know, all of a sudden your weird little call-out of a number 12 ranked middleweight, you know, actually becomes a thing that, you know, does good things for your career. So, yeah, having a plan, that should be part of what your manager is for, too, is to say, like, look, if you win, these are the steps that we want you to take in the next year, so these are the guys that we need to target. Call one of them out. Like, that's what you need a manager.
Yeah, because the whole, I mean, in the UFC, you can even see from how well they promote, who they promote, they love guys that want fights, like, that will call people out in public, you know? I mean, you look at the guys that they've pushed the most, guys like Conor McGregor, guys like Chael Sonnen, guys like Michael Bisping, it's people who immediately have that next step in mind and are giving it to the UFC for them. You know, they're more than happy to buy a fighter's own narrative, even if that narrative is slightly insane and egomaniacal.
Right, and I mean, yeah, obviously you don't want to, like, be an unranked guy calling out the champion or whatever, but, you know, if you did, then during your next fight, Rogan's probably going to bring it up that you made this ridiculous call out, and then people might laugh, and then it just becomes something that sticks in somebody's head. And you don't want to do the, you don't want to do the thing where you're like, oh, I'll take whatever, and then, like, the next day you decide on Twitter to try and call somebody out because it's kind of too late, and, you know, people aren't going to see it. It's not going to have the audience that you want, so.
Yeah. All right, so now I got a question from Forkboy here, and he says, Dana calls, he wants to know what it would take for you to get involved in the new improved MMA rankings business. What terms would you require to make that a thing you'd consider?
I mean, I don't think I could. First of all, I wrote about it when the rankings initially happened, that I didn't feel comfortable with anything that had to do with how the UFC conducts their business. It felt like kind of an old man take at the time, because, like, the guys that I was talking to that agreed were, like, Kevin Ioli and Josh Gross, and it just felt like we were just, you know, the old guys sitting in a diner, and everybody else was excited to be a part of it, but we were just like, yeah, no way. But it felt wrong to be involved with how they conducted their business to begin with, and now with the tie-in of it affecting pay, I mean, that would have to go. It would have to be put in the hands of somebody completely independent. There would need to be established guidelines that the UFC isn't a part of constructing as far as who can be ranked when people are pulled. Like, you know, it seems like such a basic thing to me for any rankings to say 12 months of inactivity, you get pulled from the rankings. Like, it's a year you haven't fought. We don't know where you are. Because, you know, think about how fast things change for a fighter in a year, health-wise or skill-wise or the way a division changes. For a guy to just sit around, sometimes it's like 6 months and a bad contract negotiation and they get pulled, or sometimes it's Dominic Cruz and he's ranked for, you know, 2 years without fighting. And, you know, it can't, you know, I would never want to be a part of something that is controlled with such a, I guess, such a promotional hand in how it happens. And so I just don't imagine that there's any set of circumstances where I personally would want to be involved with the, you know, the official UFC rankings. Something where it was like the way that that the old meta rankings worked, where it was a compilation of a bunch of sites. Like, if I was just ranking on our site and that was factored in with all these other independent sites, that's a little different, but because also you really have no control. They can just say, we're going to use your rankings. Like, but as far as, like, the UFC overseeing rankings that determine how they conduct business and what they pay and everything, there's just, I don't imagine there's a way that I would feel ethically comfortable.
Yeah, it's a little weird to me, because I think I applied for the ranking, to be a part of the rankings panel, back when it first started. And I had been working with Bloody Elbow for like 3 months or something. And, you know, I don't think anybody knew who I was, and I didn't get a seat on it. Because also, like, at that point, a third of our staff was, like, on the rankings panel. And ever since then, and part of me is like, oh, I don't want to act like I've been, like, jilted, and now I'm all like, no, I wouldn't even do that if they asked me. But ever since then, I have had this feeling of, like, what if, like, would I want to do that now? Because I don't, I can't. There's so many things wrong with it. Like I've kept track of them more or less because I've kept track of the UFC roster just because it's always such a ill-maintained mess on the UFC's own behalf. And so I keep track of the rankings too, just as a little data point to list. And it's always been totally shit and broken. And so part of me is like, I could help fix that. And part of me is like, I do not want to be part of the broken shit that drags everything else down. And I think, yeah, I mean, as you said, I think if they were aggregating rankings that were just done independent entirely, I would be somewhat, I mean, I'd be okay with that to the point that there's no control that you could reasonably have over that. But honestly, I mean, I think MMA rankings at this point have become a highly problematic idea. They've been a problematic idea for a while because it was always known that they were going to be a negotiating point for fighters. That they were going to say, I'm the number three ranked guy in the world. You have to, you know, you should be paying me more. And people are like, oh, well, that's bullshit. And then, you know, Nate Diaz says, I'm going to sit out. And they're like, okay, shit, you're not ranked anymore. See, you're not ranked at all. And so it's obviously been a strong arm tactic for them whenever they want it to be, even if it's been a pretty weak arm, but now it's very strong, and it's really hard to justify how they would do that. I think it would have to be, yeah, there would have to be some sort of collective agreement within the media, like independent media members, that, like, in order to maintain any integrity in this sport, we had to publish rankings of some sort that the UFC would use, but it would be entirely self-contained. Like, I think I could see wanting to be a part of that, because it is a problem that needs to be fixed, and it either has to be fixed by them ditching it, or it has to be fixed by enough people with a reasonable ethical standard getting together to work on it. And, man, they're like, 5 or 6 people out there that fit that criteria.
And I guess the other thing that I would feel more comfortable with it if fighters had, like, a voice at the table where, you know, if this was rolled out and, you know what, the fighters had an association that agreed to the exact terms of how, you know, the rankings would affect their pay, and, you know, still, you're going to have managers trying to leverage rankings and everything. You're going to have guys that care a lot about, you know, there's guys that have close personal relationships with fighters, and that's kind of unavoidable in what we do. I think it's ridiculous to say, like, no, don't have any ties to a specific guy. But, you know, it's hard. If you know a guy, you know him well enough that you've talked to him about his family, you're kind of up in the air on if he's the 5th or 6th best fighter in a weight class, but you know his daughter's name, you know that sometimes they have a little trouble making their bills. I think it's natural to almost be like, I kind of want to put that guy at 5 if that's going to get him, you know, $6,000 more the next time he fights or whatever. So, you know, it's really a tricky thing to try and balance, like, that this impacts their pay and that this impacts people that you know. So it's a really tricky thing, and it needs a lot of oversight. It needs agreement. It needs every voice at the table to, you know, to make it something that I would ever be comfortable with. And right now it's just kind of like, you know, seeing the shock from the fighters on the rollout and how it impacts their pay was just kind of like, oh, they had no idea.
Yeah. I think part of that, too, is that if you think about the BCS, like, the BCS has been around for a long time now. Like, when was it established? I don't know. I'm college football is not my thing, but it's been around for 20 years, 30?
Not that long, but, like, since the 90s.
Yeah, so 20 years. It's been around for 20 years now. And it's still shit. Like, it's still a broken mess that barely works. And if you have something that's been around for 20 years and it has, like, had input and oversight and all these systems in place for that long and has that much money at stake and it still doesn't work right, this system's going to be broken for a long time.
Right. I mean, yeah, they transitioned away from the BCS to playoffs this year, and there's, you know, the Big 12 is a major conference. They changed in the last couple weeks of the season, changed how they crown a champion to try and backdoor their way into the playoffs. So, you know, something with that much money and oversight and everything, the fact that that can't work smoothly, you know, the UFC and their kind of unwillingness to commit to, like, long-term standards or anything is always going to be an issue for that.
Yeah, it is. It's something that, it, like I said, I want to help fix it, but it's greasy, and I think by touching it, I would feel worse by association. All right, now we got a question from Friar Fever, which this was a special request question from Brent. He had to have this question in the show otherwise there would be no show. He was gonna walk. I was like, no, Brent. It's not that important, but it's this question or he walks. So here it is. Friar Fever asks, was Ken Shamrock a better UFC fighter or pro wrestler?
Now, he specified UFC, which is pretty limiting in Ken's career, so that's really early on. I like Ken the pro wrestler. He wasn't that good. Like, I did this thing where I was going to, like, go back and I was going to rewatch, like, the late 90s of everything, which is this massive undertaking that, you know, I don't have enough time for and I never will, but I was totally going to do it. So then I watched, like, 2 months worth of programming, and it was really exhausting and boring and horrible. But, you know, I think you look at stuff now in pro wrestling and there is a lot of MMA influence, and back then there was only a little bit, and Shamrock seemed like this kind of, you know, crazy X Factor. Like, he does things that other people don't do. And, I mean, when you look back at it, he used to, like, punch himself in the head and scream. It was such a stupid thing. Like, it looks so dumb. But at the time, it was like, oh, well, he gets punched in the head for real. So maybe that's just, like, teenage Brent thinking. But, you know, I like Ken the pro wrestler. I thought that compared to early UFC Ken, where he, you know, he was good, but I don't find him particularly memorable, but I guess maybe a lot of the early UFC stuff has started to just fade from memory. Like, you know, I've still got, like, all my old original VHS tapes and everything, but they're so hard to go back and watch.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of them, and I mean, I still have an enjoyment out of them, but most of that enjoyment is sort of like a Mystery Science Theater-esque, you know, comical play-by-play of errors as you go through and watch the, you know, 4-11 former pro wrestler beat up the steroid-stuffed guy claiming a background in jiu-jitsu who looks like he's never grappled with anything larger than a sport shake. And, you know, that's fun, but yeah, if you're, like, looking for, like, the quality origins of combat, it's rough going. I still gotta say, though, that he was a better UFC fighter, and this is coming from somebody who lived mostly outside the pro wrestling bubble, although I can say that I probably, in my teenage years, only knew Ken Shamrock as a pro wrestler because that was, like, close to the time that was around the time I was actually watching pro wrestling, and so he sort of, like, I heard the name, and I didn't watch UFC or MMA at all at that point. And so I even though I kind of knew him originally from pro wrestling, I got to go with UFC because I think that he still has some cred from the MMA community. Like, you can still sort of be like, oh yeah, Ken Shamrock, he was a really great fighter, like, in the early days, in the UFC, he was really part of the growth of the sport. Whereas, I can't imagine pro wrestling fans are ever revisiting Ken Shamrock in any way, shape, or form. I can't, like, I just can't picture that being a thing where, like, even the nerdiest pro wrestling people are going back to, like, Ken Shamrock's career and looking at what an impact it had.
See, that's the problem, is I hate, like, my little group of pro wrestling people are the nerdiest people who do, like, have entire podcast episodes of, like, recapping Ken Shamrock's career, so I don't know how fondly they look back on it, but...
Alright, so maybe that may be a bubble I'm just not a part of.
We got a Twitter question on who would win a fight at 2:05 tomorrow between CM Punk and Ken Shamrock, which is
I think the fans would win. I think we as viewership would win that fight. And otherwise, I think both of them would lose. I don't think that there's any way that would be the Kimbo Slice Houston Alexander of MMA fights.
Yeah, I mean, having never seen what Punk can do, it's not really a question that I can answer, but...
But you've seen what Ken Shamrock can do lately.
Right. I know he can fail a drug test, so I think maybe I just would go with it's going to be a no contest.
Yeah. Is being drug-free part of CM Punk's kayfabe, or is he really straight edge?
Oh, no, that's a real thing.
Alright.
So I guess if he wins, then the result stands. If Ken wins, then it's a no contest.
Alright, speaking of which, Tilds asks, question for Brookhouse, and I have no idea why this is just a question for you, but apparently I'm not good enough to answer it, so I'm not gonna. What do you think about CM Punk making his UFC run?
I think it says a lot about where the UFC is right now. The idea that they would bring in somebody that's 0-0 and admit that they're going to have to basically bring in guys for him to fight. And, I mean, they haven't said it, but really the goal is to bring in guys for him to beat because they want him to win some fights. And, you know, I don't think he would ever say that he has no designs on ever fighting for a title or that he doesn't really care if he ever ends up ranked. Like, maybe he does care, but I don't think that that's what the UFC is looking at this as, is like, you know, trying to set him up for an eventual title shot. They can, you know, it's Strikeforce and Herschel Walker, basically, where, you know, it's a name that's going to bring in some interest. People will buy it. He doesn't have to fight anybody that you've ever heard of. People are going to buy it to see how he does. It's the UFC needs a little extra something right now to try and drum up a little bit of business, and they've got an intriguing schedule of fights and some big fights coming up in the first half of the year. So if you can mix this in with hopefully business getting back to where it should be, then, you know, it's a good thing for the UFC that they can get the business, but I think, you know, like I said, it says a lot for where the UFC is as far as wanting to drum up business, that they would bring in somebody that they specifically have to change the entire, like, the entire concept during Zuffa's run especially has been the UFC is the best fighting the best, like, the best mixed martial artists fight here against the best mixed martial artists, which we don't know, I mean, there is no way that CM Punk is currently one of the best mixed martial artists in the world, and the guy that they're going to bring in, like a 1-0 or 1-1 type fighter, like, that's, you know, that's an entire change in philosophy, I guess.
Well, it's not, I said I wasn't going to answer, so I'm just responding to your point now. This isn't to Brent's point, because God knows I'm not qualified for that. You know, that wasn't to the question. I'm not there for that, but, I mean, it's not a break from what they've been bringing in for the past year and a half, though. Like, the UFC is very explicitly not the home of the best fighting the best when you have Royston Wee fighting Dave Galera. Like, it's just not. They've already broken that mold to the point that, you know, M1 Global can put on a better card than the UFC on a given weekend. Like, there have been UFC cards that are so weak that it's just like, really? This? You know? You look at that, like, their New Zealand card on paper that was headlined by, Tahuna versus Marquardt. Like, it ended up being a fun card, but it's, you know, you can't look at that and be like, that's clearly the home of the best fighting the best are on this card.
Right. I mean, I guess a part of that is the oversaturation argument that at a certain point, like, there's only so many best that can compete. Now you're filling out cards. And I guess it's the difference between filling out cards with bodies versus the fact that they will be nobody's heavily promoting Royston Wee versus heavily promoting a fight that's basically like, come see what the hell happens with this guy.
Yeah. I mean,
that was partially Brock Lesnar, but Lesnar did have, you know, the amateur wrestling credentials and, you know, enough of a background that was established where he was a world-class competitor in an area that is directly, you know, applicable to MMA, whereas Punk, it's just like, we're going to put this guy that you've heard of in with some guy that you probably haven't, or maybe you have, but he's not anything special. Really, you're turning in basically entirely on the premise of seeing if he turns out to be any good, whereas Lesnar was like, this guy was really good at wrestling, he's going to fight Frank Mir, you know, we're going to see what happens. So,
well, and heavyweight is MMA's, I call it the mystery spot, like, you know those houses that they build them so it looks like all the perspective is tilted and funky and, like, gravity doesn't work the way it's supposed to? Heavyweight is that for MMA. Like, you really, the rules don't apply. You can't go into a heavyweight bout and be like, oh yeah, because this guy's an all-American wrestler and this guy's a 42-year-old Ukrainian journeyman grappler, the wrestler's going to beat his ass. And, you know, like, it just doesn't work that way. But, so, to that point, though, of oversaturation and too many fighters and all that, with the new uniforms, this is from Little Clumsy Ninja. With the new uniforms, who will you be cheering for? Blue Drone or Red Drone in their fight? Also, why hasn't Green Drone had to fight a wrestler?
I guess I would, you know, I'm a Red Drone guy, I guess. You know, they're given Green Drone the soft path because he talks a little better. He's popular with the Irish fans, obviously. So, you know, you softball him into the eventual title shot and see what happens. And, you know, he'll get that additional ranking bump and make a little extra money while he's at it, too. So that's good for him.
Personally, I'm a Blue Drone fan, so I'm just saying, you know, if it comes to it, Blue Drone for life. All right, more reasonable follow-up from M. Janicek. If you could redesign the new uniforms, what would they look like, and what system would you put in place to replace? If you could redesign the new uniforms, what would they look like? Because we've already talked about the media rankings. That was the second half of his question. But
yeah.
Is there anything that you would want to do differently with this uniform deal? Let's just change it to that, because we're not going to sit down with Photoshop and design a new uniform right now.
I guess I would just hope that there's room for some individuality, I guess. Like, you know, hopefully they have, like, a catalog of different options that they can pick from, where, you know, Reebok is very prevalent on, but, you know, it doesn't need to be where, you know, it looks like the same, you know, the same surf shorts and gloves on each, you know, it just looks like you're swapping different bodies into the shorts every fight. And Yeah, I guess that's just always been a part of MMA, is the kind of, as awful as the individual expression is sometimes, that it's still there. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't push people to new heights of bad tattoos just to express themselves.
Yeah, that might be a problem. People getting like their name and their birth date and like their address and their social security number tattooed across their back.
Right, yeah, and you know, I guess that's really the only thing. I guess I don't pay that much attention to what guys are wearing when they fight. Usually I do a quick check for sponsors that I think are kind of funny, which I guess I'll miss doing that, and then it's beyond that. I don't pay a lot of attention, but you know, it just needs to not look completely bland, and like, it's not a uniform like in baseball or football where everybody should look the same. It's, you know, and even, you know, you don't see a lot of expression in boxing, but there's the guys that wear the frilly skirts and the guys that have like the extra fringe or whatever, you know.
I will admit that over the years, though, boxing has become more and more to look like very small men fighting in like clown pants.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. They're well below the knees to like mid calf on some guys now. So.
It's the weirdest thing, because you go back and you look at like classic boxers and they're wearing like these little tiny shorts with like a cup that protects your junk, and like it's just like a pretty tight little, like, you look like they look like an athlete. And now you look at like half the fights out there, and especially if it's like a, you know, 135, 145 pound fighter, and it really looks like they've just climbed out of a clown car, and all they're missing are the suspenders to like snap with their boxing gloves.
If a guy wears suspenders to fight, though, I'm a fan. So.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. All right.
Did you have a redesign in mind?
Did I ever what?
Did you have a redesign in mind for the uniform?
Oh, a redesign in mind. Yes, I forgot all about the whole question. I'm getting way too lost here. I think that hopefully, personally, I would hope that they actually were able to bring in like a tailor, or at least have a thing like where fighters would measure themselves and send their measurements to Reebok, and then have like a whole catalog of options to pick out, like, how you want different types of uniform sized or colored. You know, I mean, like, fuck, you know, Nike has, like, whole websites designed to, like, you know, pimp your own shoe, and you can, like, design your own sneaker to be, like, super custom just the way you want it, with colors and polka dots and all that shit, and order it. I would hope that if you're making all the fighters wear one company's gear, that you would make it incredibly customizable. Just like, and really well tailored. Because half the time, I mean, I think one of the things that I, you know, would be nice to me is that you do see a lot of fighters wearing ill-fitting shit. Like, I can't tell how many times I've seen fighters like constantly pulling up their shorts or trying to keep their shorts off their thigh because they can't kick with them on in a fight. And it's just like, why are you wearing this shit if you can't even fight in it?
Well, I've had fighters tell me that what they do is, like, a week out from leaving, they order some shorts, or they go, like, to a website. They just, like, guess their size, they get it shipped, and then that's what they have, because they don't have enough time to replace it. So yeah, I mean, that would be cool if they could actually fit it. And then if there weren't, like, I hope it isn't something as stupid as, like, there's a blue corner and a red corner. Like, if somebody wants to wear, like, purple, then fucking awesome. As long as it's got the big Reebok, you know, logo or whatever, then, you know, let them wear whatever they want to wear. And, you know, it could look more professional than Cody McKenzie in basketball shorts.
Yeah, I think, because, I mean, there is a reasonable importance there that the UFC's shown that they can't have, like, the level of product quality oversight to keep dudes from going into the octagon with, like, basketball shorts with magic marker on them. So, you know, this is a step in the right direction in that way to me. Like, visually, I like the idea a lot, but I just hope that they actually you know, they don't just make, you know, tell people to give them their size and then mail them a uniform.
Right.
All right. So, let's see. Other question we wanted to get to. Here's one. It's not a current one, but we are running down on time. It's from Russell Davies. He's one of our moderators, actually. Why is Fedor so polarizing? Either people seem convinced that he's the greatest of all time or that he was a can crusher. Why those two extremes?
I guess it can only possibly to me be that it's somebody that's a little newer that wasn't around for the Pride days and doesn't understand, like, yeah, there were weird, stupid, waste of time fights that happened, but at the same time, they kind of got, you know, they got guys in the ring and let them fight a couple more times a year than they would have otherwise. But, like, the Pride heavyweight division was so much better than the UFC's heavyweight division. Like, you look at the title fights and the top end of what was happening in the UFC's heavyweight division then, and, like, as bad as heavyweight MMA is right now, it was just absolute garbage. Where, like, Tim Sylvia and Andrei Arlovsky was, like, as good as they could put on. Like, that was the premier thing that they could do at that time. And he took Nogueira, who is legitimately one of the best heavyweight MMA fighters of all time, and he just beat the shit out of him twice. Like, those were great fights. Like, everybody loved those fights, but they weren't competitive fights at all. It was Nogueira being put on his back, trying for a submission, Fedor just kind of easily shrugging it off, just moving back through, and just bombing him with huge punches from inside the guard. And, like, even stuff where, you know, the Randleman slam where he just gets just dropped on the top of his head, and the speed with which he not only recovered from being put in a bad position but getting dumped on his head, like, the speed with which he flipped that fight was ridiculous. And, you know, he was such a great talent that, you know, I don't really think that there's a lot of debate over whether or not he was legitimate or that, you know, all he did was fight cans or something. Pride had weird, stupid fights that shouldn't have happened from a competitive standpoint, but, you know, to take, like, the smaller end of what he did and say that that, like, ruins the legitimacy of the rest of it is crazy, and I think can only come from somebody that doesn't understand what was really happening at that point.
Yeah, I think part of it too is that, and this gets to a secondary question that he had about Dan Henderson and why people love him so ubiquitously in general. To me, I think it's sort of a thing where if we take what, you know, the internet is still, I think, to this point, a vastly English language platform. Like, 95% of the internet is in English. Just, and so thus, like, at least, you know, if you're online, spending a lot of time online, a lot of the voices that you're going to hear about in MMA fandom are going to be American voices, because that's where one of the biggest English speaking populations of MMA fans are. And American fight fans have a prototype of fighter that they love. And it's Dan Henderson, it's Chuck Liddell, it's Robbie Lawler, it's white dudes that seem corn-fed and can crack. Like, and Fedor is a corn-fed white dude that can crack, but he doesn't speak English, and I think that there's still this segment of MMA fandom that just, like, you know, it's the same segment that thinks that hated Anderson Silva for, like, the majority of his title reign, like, at least the first half of it. There was a significant amount of people that were just like, oh, Anderson Silva's just this punk who doesn't fight and dances and, you know, whatever, I don't like watching him. And they want Chuck Liddell, and it's hard to convince those people of anybody else being really great. And I think that that sort of ends up being the backlash to Fedor, is just that he's not one of the like idolized few that fits into that niche.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not one of those people that like holds it against somebody for being newer to the sport. Like, that's cool, you know, come on board, like, catch up and everything, but it's hard to explain to people how much fun Pride was. Like, you can go back and you can maybe get a sense of it, but it was so wild, like, in the moment. Mm-hmm. It was such a crazy thing that, like, yeah, they put together this huge tournament with these great fighters and Giant Silva. Like, it was, you just got such weird, random stuff, but then you also got these awesome moments and this huge atmosphere, and then, like, if you were around and digging around on the internet, then there was also this whole other side to it where, like, the Yakuza was, like, controlling shit behind the scenes, and, like, it was this crazy thing, and then there's Fedor, who's, like, dominating stuff, and he's all mysterious, but then we start to get pictures from his personal life. He's always wearing these weird sweaters, and here he is eating some ice cream, and actually he's a pretty nice guy, and he's always got this weird priest around, and, like, you know, beyond, like, how awesome he was as a fighter, was that he was this weird personality that, because of the language barrier and cultural differences, we didn't fully get, so he also seemed like this weird, quirky, like, you know, Russian, like, kind of like a lovable guy who also might kick your ass, but also maybe is kind of a weird orthodox, like, you know, so there was just so much going on with Pride and with the individual personalities inside of it. You know, it was a different time, and, you know, maybe MMA is better off now with kind of a centralized location for almost every top fighter, but, man, that was fun as hell back then.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I'm kind of, like, into what Bellator is doing right now. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not there. It's not that Pride level, like, oh my God, constant, like, you know, every event's just like, this is going to be the craziest thing ever. But there's, it is quality, it's looking like it could be quality circus grade MMA. And, like, that may seem like an oxymoron in terms, but it's something that when it happens and when it clicks together, it's really fun to watch.
Right, and that's the thing. It requires a degree of, like, legitimate good fighting also.
Yeah.
And then it takes some spectacle, and it takes some ridiculous, like, you know, Bellator introducing that big screen was awesome. It kind of added a new flavor to the things. And yeah, there were some really stupid walkout videos and performances and stuff, but that's the thing, is, like, I feel like if you take MMA too seriously, then it does, like, become a really weird thing where, you know, if you really just focus on the business aspects, fighters are getting screwed by sponsors as it is now, but now they're also losing their ability to find their own sponsors, and they're losing control over their pay, and that's pretty depressing. And we talked about the, you know, the brain damage earlier, and we're going to start to see guys paying the price soon because it's getting far enough down the road. So yeah, I just need some screwy shit sometimes that's just fun and weird and makes me laugh in the middle of everything, and then throw me some good fights too. So
yeah, I mean, you know, putting Melvin Manhoff in against Joe Schilling, like, you hear that and you just think, that's some fun shit I gotta watch. Like, it may be the stupidest, most ridiculous fight on the face of the planet, but I have to see it, you know?
Right, and then give me Will Brooks and Michael Chandler afterwards.
Yeah.
And we're good.
Exactly. And, I mean, and that's partially why the CM Punk thing, like, I would, you know, yeah, maybe there's some sporting part of me that's like, oh, no, God, this is the best fighting, the best, goddamn. But part of me is just like, fuck, I'll watch him fight some, like, some random dude as, like, a co-main event of a pay-per-view. Why the fuck not? That'll be fun.
And it's why I kind of want Bellator. Like, I want that crazy-ass rumor where Alberto Del Rio is going to sign with Bellator. and they're going to just one-up each other with these weird signings, and then somebody brings back Lesnar, and then you have a card that's like Alberto Del Rio is fighting right before Brock Lesnar, and then, you know, and then we've got maybe Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner too is on the same card, and like I would pay money for that. As sad as that sounds, I would pay so much money for that.
All right, so we got one last question because we're just about out of time, and I realize there's a lot of questions we didn't get to, but like I said, I think this went well, so we're going to do more of these. We'll try to do one every month, and we're going to we've got a big list of everybody's questions they've asked, so we're going to come back and pick out others and all that. So if we missed your question, we may still ask. We may still answer it. If it was really stupid, we're not going to, so... I mean, unless it's really stupid. Like, if you can ask a really stupid question, that goes on, no question.
Which is mostly Mookie, by the way.
Yeah, which is mostly Mookie. Also, Dio gets a special shout-out for telling his story about TB money and public transportation. But but that's a story for another day. And that's a story for Tim to tell because he lived it. But anyway, quick question. You have to answer it in as little as possible. No blathering on. Corey Nielsen asks, what is MMA?
I feel like I just answered what MMA should be. I guess it's just like, it's dudes and now women punching each other in the face and trying to submit each other, and it's weird and fun, and I mean, it's just that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's like the purest distillation of sporting competition that can also just be a total fucking shit show.
Seems fair.
Because when you break it down, like, and you strip down most of the rules and most of the, like, you know, oh, we have a ball and things like that to mitigate the physicality, when you strip all that down, you end up with something that it, like, it can look entirely not like sport in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, at its worst, it's so incredibly dumb and unsportslike that
All right.
That's MMA.
That's MMA. And on that note, I think we're going to wrap this up because we've used up our hour and we want to do another one of these. But thanks for joining me for this. Thanks for kicking it off. I think it's been a success. Anything you want to plug, anything coming up, any Twitter, you know, tell people where to find you or what to do with you if they see you on the street.
If you see me on the street, if you say hi, like the guy at the grocery store a couple months ago, that was pretty nice. Twitter, Brent Brookhouse. You should also be following Bloody Elbow on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. If you try and add me on Facebook, I won't add you. I'm sorry. That's just my rule. There's so many backed up friend requests. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, Twitter is how you get me.
All right, and I'm at TheZaneSimon on Twitter. Anyway, give this video a like on YouTube if you watched it there, because that actually like equates to money and all sorts of other amazing shit that helps keep the site running. And follow us on SB Nation and BloodyElbow.com. Thanks for joining in.